Too Aware. We are dedicated to communicating information that inspires your positive growth and change. Are you interested in a peaceful planet? Are you interested in optimal health? Are you living with purpose? Are you enjoying your life? We realize each person can make a difference, and our mission is to empower your awareness. The choices that you make in every moment shape your life, and we encourage you to realize that you have your own answers and to always listen to your own truth. We invite you to stay aware. Welcome to Aware. Hi, this is Lisa Garr. 8 years ago, my guest wrote his first book entitled The Power of Now, and it became a New York Times bestseller list. It was on the bestseller list as number one, and it has now sold 2 million copies to date. And it is my true pleasure and deep honor to be joined today by contemporary spiritual teacher and modern-day prophet Eckhart Tolle. He has written a very new book and a very necessary book about our planet entitled A New Earth, Awakening to Your Life's Purpose. Thank you so much for joining me today, Eckhart. It's a pleasure to have you with me. I wanted to take you back a while ago at the very young age of 29 when you had a profound spiritual transformation that radically changed the course of your life. Could you share with us what was going on in your life leading up to that point?
Yes, I'd been suffering from anxiety and depression for a number of years, most of my 20s, including my time at university. And that came to a crisis point when I was 29. I just graduated from London University. I was happy for a couple of weeks after that, and then the state that I was so familiar with, the anxiety, the depression, started again. One night I woke up in the middle of the night, it wasn't the first time, but this time the anxiety was so acute that suddenly the thought came into my head, I can't live with myself any longer. I just can't live with myself any longer. And that thought repeated itself a few times. And then suddenly an awareness came in, and I became aware of that thought itself. And I looked at the thought. That's strange. If I cannot live with myself, there must be two of me here. There must be an I, and there must be a self that I can't cannot live with anymore.
Hmm.
And that recognition or that incoming awareness created a gap between the self and the awareness. Whereas before, the awareness and the sense of self, the sense of I, were one single entity or phenomenon. And suddenly there was a separation between the self, which was later recognized it as the mind created me, the sense of self that consists of thoughts, thought forms, and emotions that go with the thought forms. That separated itself, so I could stand back from the unhappy me, the unhappy self, and see it. So there was a shift in identity from being identified with the unhappy stream of thinking, poor me, the emotions that go with it, the anxiety, what's going to happen to me. And suddenly I became the awareness rather than the self. So that was the awakening, as I didn't know that at the time. It was just a very strange phenomenon that night. And I felt myself being drawn into a kind of void. There was still a little bit of fear at that moment. What's happening to me? And I heard a voice, not literally a voice, but a knowing inside my chest that said, resist nothing. It said, resist nothing. So I let go of resistance. The fear subsided. And then I must have gone to sleep after that. And the next morning I woke up, and for the first time in my life, I was totally free of anxiety. And there's an incredible sense of peace. I knew something very strange had happened. I didn't know what. All I knew was that whatever I perceived and looked at, and wherever I went, that day I went for a walk, I went out, I was in London at the time, looking at the traffic, riding on top of the double-decker bus, and everything was peaceful. There was an enormous background of peace to everything I perceived. And I said, what happened? I didn't understand what had happened. It took me years to understand that this was an awakening, and it took me years to understand that what had happened was that my sense of I had separated itself from the mind made me, the ego. I realized myself as the deeper consciousness, the formless consciousness. And that realization of yourself as the underlying consciousness rather than the form that consciousness takes, which is the thoughts and the emotions, the continuous stream of thinking and emotions that most people are identified with as themselves, as a me, that isn't really at all. It's a temporary construct. That was the kind of the liberation from being identified with that temporary construct, the me, the story of me, as I later came to call it, and so on. And I realized myself as the deeper substratum, as it were, the consciousness out of which all that arises. But the consciousness itself, we could call that awareness, is the awareness is when the consciousness becomes conscious of itself. When you become conscious of yourself as awareness rather than, in essence, as awareness rather than as a person. And so that's what happened to me that night. And out of that, it took many years before a teaching arose out of that. It took me years to understand what had happened. And it took me more years to be able to convey to others that this transformation is possible for everybody.
And that you've shared with us through your book, The Power of Now. Now, let me ask you, you undoubtedly, you know, through university, you had learned of Freud's view of the human mind and the separation of the ego and the id and the superego. So what you discovered in this awakening was obviously against everything that you probably had learned. Is that right?
Yes, in many ways, because I had, for many years, I thought at the time that all the answers were to be found through analytical thinking and through the intellect. That's why I went to university. I started at 24, relatively late, and then gradually realized the ultimate answers to the problems of existence and life cannot be found through analytical thinking. In fact, it's the opposite of that. The ultimate answers lie in freeing yourself from the compulsion to think and from being identified with the stream of thinking.
Yes.
That was the realization. And of course, as you say, that's totally opposite from what I had been conditioned to believe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was. And yet most people look outside themselves for other things, especially in this American culture where we're shown through the media and very, very early on in life that your doctor has your answers, or your teacher sets the rules, or that your parents have the answers. And up to a certain point, you know, that might be true for your safety, but there really isn't a lot of instruction or messages on looking for those answers of universal truth within yourself.
That's right, because all the other answers are somebody else's, what somebody else's thoughts, really, that then people need to believe in. So anything that requires belief isn't really the answer, because it implies that you haven't realized it for yourself. You believe in what somebody else is saying. So it's really this is what's happened to religion also over the centuries. Religion became ideology, belief structures. But people, for a while, they take refuge in that because they are looking for something to identify with. So traditionally, they took refuge in their religion or their particular sect or church, perhaps to a lesser extent these days. These days they may take refuge in some kind of theory, or they may take refuge in certain implicit beliefs that are implicit in the mainstream culture. For example, the more you have, the more happy you become, the more fully you are yourself.
Things.
Yes, things, acquiring more things, the need for more, which is a deep form of conditioning. And that's what a lot of the, not just American, but Western culture, and Western culture really these days means almost the whole of the planet.
Yeah.
Because those who haven't made it yet, who haven't reached the stage of the consumer society, that's what they're aspiring to.
Right.
They don't realize that there is a very
value in the simplicity.
Downside to that. And yeah. It leads you astray, ultimately, which is not to say that you cannot enjoy things for their beauty or for their quality, but this incessant need to have more, that deep form of conditioning really leads you astray and really leads you into continuous frustration, because it's never enough.
And the identity is usually linked with how much you have.
Yes, that's the, I have, mm-hmm. I'm modifying the famous statement by French philosopher Descartes, who said, I think, therefore I am. In our modern culture, it's more like, I have, therefore I am.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
And realizing that the I am has nothing to do with possessions, has nothing to do with belief systems, has nothing to do with your personal history. There's a deeper sense of I am, of beingness, in every human being that has nothing to do with the past and has nothing to do with the future, what the future might bring to them, what the future might give them. There's a deeper sense of I am or beingness in every human being that is inseparable from the present moment. Now, that's where most people don't look for themselves. They look to complete their sense of self through more. They want to become more or acquire more in the future. And that's fine on the level of form. You need future and time. You need time to learn something, you to experience this or that. There's nothing wrong with that, but to look for yourself, to look for that ultimate sense of deep satisfaction and inner peace and aliveness, to look for it there always leads to frustration. So one could say the most important thing, the one thing that really matters, that reminds me of a saying in the New Testament, the famous story of Mary and Martha. Mary was busy and anxious, working and preparing the meal and doing this and that, and Mary was just listening to the words of Jesus. And then Jesus says to Martha, Martha, you are anxious and worried about many things, but only one thing is needful. And it's the realization there's only one thing in this life that really matters. Everything else you can pursue, it's fine. It's the play of form. It's the dance of life. But the one thing that really matters is to find who you are or what you are beyond mental constructs, beyond material things, beyond personal history. That deeper sense of being as I am. And that is something that everybody can have access to immediately within themselves. Just for this to happen, the stream of thinking needs to subside, if only for a moment.
Explain that, because you had an awakening that helped you release that sense of anxiety, and you came to a place that almost snapped in you that said, I can live without that anxiety now and live with peace everywhere. How would you suggest people getting to that place without that snap of awakening, or can they do that themselves?
Yes, they can, yes. One starting point, for example, is to realize that in almost everybody's life, except people who are totally, continuously unhappy, depressed almost to the point of insanity, perhaps not in them, but in almost everybody, there are what one could call spaces. Every day, every hour in their life, there are short inner spaces that arise. Now, what I call space is a moment in which the mind, the thinking mind, is not active, but you are fully conscious. So there's consciousness free, that is free of thinking. For example, when you look at, let's say, a beautiful sunset, when you're out in nature and you feel, you see the beauty of it, to be able to even perceive beauty, there must be a short space within you in which the beauty is perceived, because thinking cannot be aware of beauty. There's only the deeper level of yourself can respond to beauty. So it's to realize that in almost everybody's life, there are already spaces arising in their life, and that's why they are not jumping off the bridge, so to speak. That's why they're still here, because there is something in them that makes life worth living, that there is a concealed source of joy. And that's why people want to continue to live.
Mm-hmm.
So even people who are obsessed with things and always busy about the next thing, even in them there are occasional moments of when an inner space arises. And that's why they are still here. They haven't committed suicide yet.
I'll tell you, the cell phone does not allow, it really pretty much robs that space, doesn't it?
Yes.
But any moment that you would have of peace and silence, there's this tool right here that allows you to connect to the next moment instantly. And it was a very marketable tool. But
oh, yes. And then, of course, our culture has devised so many things so that you don't have to experience this place. In some places, even if you go into the elevator, there's music. Yeah, I even saw TV screens in elevators now.
Oh. Right.
Or just to avoid experience that moment of inner stillness, because that's really what it is. So it's the starting point is for people to become aware that they already have within them that dimension. We can call it space, or we can call it stillness. Now, stillness doesn't mean that you are asleep. Stillness means you're fully conscious, but there's no mental noise. There's just consciousness. So it's for people to become aware that this awakening is not something that they need to acquire. It's not something that somebody else could give them. It's not something that you need to work hard for, or that you need lifetimes or years of study to get, because it's already part of your essential nature, that inner sense of I am or stillness. These are just pointers towards it, the words that we use.
And are you saying this is a state that you go in and out of, or is it a state to come?
For most people, it's a gradual, for a while they go, the inner stillness arises, and then they get drawn back into thinking. And then perhaps an hour later, or there's again a moment of stillness, and they become conscious of it. Oh, there's a stillness, and there's just an inner space. And in that space, they feel deeply alive. And if they then start thinking again, it might only have been 5 seconds or 10 seconds of inner stillness. The thinking that comes after the stillness is actually more powerful and more inspired. You can you are much more likely to come up with an original thought after having gone into a moment of stillness rather than, say, having to think continuously, because the more you think without any gap in the thinking, the more pointless and repetitive the thinking becomes. So all creative people have that ability. They may not even know it. They may just do it instinctively. They have that ability to go briefly, in some cases, into stillness. Mm-hmm. And then some creative impulse, whatever it is in their field of work, the creative realization or impulse or the new insight comes out of that. Now, for most creative people, it's only a relatively small percentage of humans who actually are creative. For most of them, they only have access to that inner dimension in their work. The moment they leave their work, they go home, in most cases, they fall back into the normal unconsciousness where they're totally identified with thinking. Hmm. Think again. So, but really, this is one approach is to realize the stillness is already in you. You just have to look for it. It's already there. It's underneath the noise. The vitally alive stillness that is consciousness itself. It's already there. That's one approach. And the other approach is to actually invite it in, to say, okay, where's the stillness? What can I do to make room for that stillness now? And so I also give a few hints what it is you can do. One is to become conscious of what I call your inner body. Now, what that means is, in your attention, instead of being in the head, in the thought processes, moves into what one could call the aliveness that is inside your body. And for some people, that at first when I say it doesn't make sense, they say, what aliveness? So they only live in their head. They live in the upper story. It's like having a huge house, but all you ever know is the loft. It's the head where most people's attention is. They have lost touch with the body. So if you can actually feel that the body is alive, that means your attention moves from thinking into the energy field of the body. For some people, it starts with feeling the aliveness in their hands. And it's a strange thing when you first feel that. Some people say, oh, it's a bit of tingling. They can't describe what it is, but undoubtedly, they suddenly realize, yes, there is life in here. There is an aliveness, and once you can feel your hands, you can feel your feet, your legs, your arms, the rest of your body, and then a global sense of aliveness, and living like that takes your attention away from where it habitually is in the stream of thinking, and takes it to a much more beautiful and deeper place. And so people can realize one easy way of stepping out of this compulsion to think. And psychologists have found out that 99% of our thinking or more is absolutely repetitive and useless. So much of the time you don't need to think, you just need to be. There are, of course, times when thinking is a helpful tool. But a lot of the time you feel much more alive if you can simply enjoy the experience of the present moment without needing to interpret it through the mind. So you are conscious, but you're no longer forced to interpret and like and dislike and have a reactive relationship to whatever happens. So it's allowing life to be. And where is life? Now, in this moment. It cannot be anywhere else. So it's allowing this moment to be as it is without the compulsion to react against it, as the mind usually does, or run away from it, or judge it in some way and say, oh, no, this shouldn't be, I don't want to be here, or whatever it is, what the mind does. So going into the body enables you to live rooted in being, which means in the now. Mm-hmm. It anchors you in the present moment, which after all is all you ever have. There is nothing else. Your entire life consists of the now.
It's very...
That's an amazing realization, isn't it?
Yes.
But everybody's concerned about future and the next moment.
And the goals.
Doesn't exist except in the head.
Yes. You know what? It is a very profound moment, and to experience that is bliss.
Yes.
I experience that when I watch my little girl sleep.
Yes.
I can see so much, and I just... It seems like hours. Well, I'll just watch her for a few minutes, but so much happens in that moment and that stillness, because I don't want to make a sound or a move. But
and so you probably realize when you watch your child, then you also become still.
Yes.
And then you can actually put some attention on that and feel the stillness within you,
mm-hmm.
and you can still see your child, and that deepens that experience. You become conscious of the background to that experience, which is the stillness in you, and what you're perceiving.
Now, the question that comes to my mind, not at that moment, but in other moments, that in that moment of that stillness, there still exists murder in this world, and death, and war, and violence, and the destruction of our earth. How do I live with that moment, knowing that all of those things still exist around me? And these are the questions that you pose in your book, A New Earth.
Yes. Only you can make a start so that you are no longer part of the insanity that's in the world. So only the individual can make that start. You cannot sort out the world out there and abolish the insanity of the world out there. You can only transcend the insanity that is part of the human condition, but not doesn't mean we are stuck with it forever. There's the possibility now of going beyond. But the only place where you can be, you go beyond the human insanity that creates all that madness that we see out there. The only place where you can go beyond it is in yourself. And then that spreads, because you then no longer feed it. You no longer feed it through egoic reaction, and you don't even condemn those people anymore who are still unconscious and who are creating all that suffering in the world. You don't condemn them as human beings anymore, because you recognize what they are doing is simply a manifestation of human unconsciousness. And this is, we have reached a point in the evolution of our species where we have to go beyond the madness. We have to reach the next stage in human evolution. In the past, it didn't matter so much. Humans were, in many ways, dysfunctional already 1,000, 2,000, and 3,000 years ago. It didn't matter so much because the human madness couldn't destroy the planet yet. We hadn't developed all the science and technology that we have now. And the science and technology that we have now is actually, in most cases, almost say, in the service of human madness.
Mm-hmm.
So it magnifies the dysfunction of the human mind.
It perpetuates it, yes.
Only the individual can go beyond it so that the madness stops with you. You no longer contribute it. And then it spreads out from you. It affects your relationships. It affects the way in which you do things at work. It affects your entire life. You emanate then a different energy field. It affects even people you don't come into contact with, because at a deeper level, all humans are connected. There is such a thing as the collective human consciousness. And so whatever happens to any one human being, if one human being goes beyond the insanity, it affects not only all those that human being comes into contact with, it affects also countless others and makes it easier for others. The more individuals that go through that change now, and I know there are many who are, the easier it becomes for others. And it kind of a momentum builds up, so that I'm quite optimistic, despite what we see on television and so on, despite all the madness, I'm quite optimistic that the transformation of consciousness is happening. But at the same time, there's also an acceleration of the dysfunction. collective human dysfunction. So one could almost say that at the present time, things are getting worse and better simultaneously.
Hmm.
The old is in the old consciousness, as I sometimes call it, is intensifying the ego consciousness,
mm-hmm.
and the arising of the new is also intensifying. Now, you still rarely see that on television. Mostly in the news, you don't see the arising of the new consciousness. It's still happening underground, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. Well,
not completely, but
we're trying,
to a large extent. But it's what we are doing here. This
yes.
is in the news. This is radio.
Yes.
So here, too, changes are happening. There are people who bring consciousness through the medium of television and radio. There's this. Oprah is doing wonderful work and
mm-hmm.
some other people.
Yes.
So things are changing, and there are certain truths that are being spoken openly and understood by many, realized by many now, that before were esoteric. People had to go to monasteries and spend 10 years in monasteries before they would ever reach that point of realization, and many didn't even then.
That was a question I had of now, 8 years later, you wrote this book, A New Earth. Why did you choose this topic? Is this something that was, I could tell you had a desire to bring awareness about our planet and our Earth and what can be done about it, but why did you go to this now that you've written this new book? What is it that you're attempting to do with the new book?
Well, the new book is a reflection of the evolution of the teaching since The Power of Now came out. I've been giving hundreds of talks all over the world and teaching sessions, and over the years, the form of the teaching evolved, which means new perspectives came in, new signposts, as I sometimes call it, because words are not really signposts. And so the teaching evolved in response to what was needed, in response to the people who came to hear what I had to say. And what I have to say is really consciousness speaking, not me as a person.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And the book, in a way, is a reflection of the evolution of the teaching. Now, the essence, of course, is exactly the same as The Power of Now. And the form, there are certain differences. And the more signposts one can use, the better, because different signposts work for different people. So there are new perspectives and new signposts in the new Earth that were not in The Power of Now. And I hope that the new Earth will reach many people who perhaps would never have dreamt of picking up a spiritual book so far. So I believe it will make the truth even more accessible to an even wider range of people than The Power of Now.
I see. And then you said in the book that there are no more signposts pointing towards awakening. That time is now.
Yes, the signposts need to be recognized as signposts, and once they have fulfilled their usefulness, you don't need them anymore.
Mm-hmm. Right,
so
of course.
You don't need to believe in anything. You don't believe in, I hope nobody's ever going to have a Power of Now church. That's not necessary.
Uh-huh.
So you don't need to believe in the now. Just live it. So it's not a theory. It's eminently practical. There's absolutely no theory about it. And so the title, The New Earth, that was the inspiration for the title of that book, came from something, a line in the Bible that actually occurs in both the Old and the New Testament. And that line speaks of a new heaven and a new earth.
Mm.
So it's a prophecy that a new heaven means, the way I see it, is heaven refers to the inner, the consciousness. Earth is the outer manifestation. And so there's always a correspondence between who we are inside, our state of consciousness, and the world that we create out there. If the world we create out there is hell, that means there must be hell inside. If we create suffering outside, then there must be unconsciousness and dysfunction inside. If we create pollution outside, we must have polluted our sweet, pure being with enormous amounts of negativity. So there's always the reflection, the Earth, which is the outer, the world of manifestation, is always a reflection of the inner. So the prophecy that I saw a new heaven and a new earth really means I saw a shift in human consciousness, and then I saw a transformed planet as a result of that transformation of human consciousness. And really, the book is really about the transformation of human consciousness. And then the new earth will arise naturally as a reflection of that inner transformation, that inner shift.
I believe if the 6.5 billion people on this planet could truly do this and transform their consciousness, this earth would shift out of the state that it's in right now and going towards to an earth of healing and an earth of peace.
Yes.
But everybody has to be on the same page.
Yes.
And that hasn't happened for histories and through religious wars and and everything. How would you envision that happening for everyone to be in that place?
Well, it's not something that I see as a future event. I actually realize it's already happening. Our very conversation right now is a sign of that. Everybody listening to this conversation right now is part already, if it makes any sense to them at all, they're listening to it now, if it makes any sense to them at all, even if there's just an inkling that, yes, there's something here that is true, I know that, that means they are already part of the unfolding consciousness. I sometimes call it the flowering of consciousness. So it's already happening now in you, and to know that so that you don't make it into a future event as something that needs to happen, because that leads us astray again, is to more realize it's already happening, and it's my responsibility to, I need to take responsibility for life. Nobody else can do that. And how can I take responsibility for life? I can only take responsibility for life by taking responsibility for this moment, the only place where life is.
Right now.
To live rightly now. What does it mean to live rightly? We could say to live rightly is to live in alignment with the present moment, because the present moment is life. And whatever happens in the present moment happens because it is connected to the totality, otherwise it wouldn't be happening. There are no isolated events. Any event goes back, if you wanted to trace back the cause of any event, you would always have to go back to the very beginning of creation. That's how interconnected everything is. And so whatever is happening now happens now because it cannot be otherwise. So it is dysfunctional to be in a relationship of denial or resistance towards the present moment. The transformation of life happens, it almost is a paradox, the transformation of your life too happens when you learn to live in a state of yes with what is. Because what is life itself. And when you cooperate with life instead of resisting or denying what is, even if it doesn't look so good on the surface or is unpleasant, it is. You cannot deny that it is. So why argue with reality, with what is? Now, what is not, I'm not saying what is a story in your head. That's already a misinterpretation. What is the simplicity of the present moment. For example, let's say you've gone bankrupt and there's only 50 cents in your pocket. That's what is. You put your hand in your pocket and say, oh, 50 cents. That's the reality of what is, and that's fine. If you can live in a state of yes with the fact of what is, then something new and helpful will quickly arise. But if you believe in a story that the mind is spinning about what is, that says, I am ruined, that's the story, that's not what is. That means you are resisting, you are imposing a story on the simplicity of now. And so you are cutting yourself off from the power of life itself, because the power of life itself, and life is not chaos, life is intelligence itself too. Life is consciousness itself. But when you resist What is, you cut yourself off from the power of life itself that otherwise would help you, assist you with all kinds of things, coincidences, synchronistic events, chance encounters. It would, or inner realizations, what it is that I have to do. Suddenly you know what you have to do. But if you were resisting the now, you'd just be trapped in repetitive and useless thinking. But if you could accept the now, a space would arise. Ah, and in that space there's peace, there's stillness, there's aliveness. Out of that space of peace, stillness, aliveness, that is an intelligence that's greater than the mind, out of that would come what is needed, a realization, an action, an insight, a chance meeting, something suddenly coming towards you from the outside. Oh, exactly what I need. But it only comes if you live in oneness with life. And oneness with life is oneness with the present moment. That's the power of now.
I could see this being true for people who have been through disasters such as the hurricane or the earthquakes that are occurring and so forth. I mean,
yes.
I've heard and seen people on television saying, I have nothing, while they stand there gripping their children. And they have their life. And it's very, I can understand, it's very easy to think that everything that you had was gone. But once again, those were things.
That's right. And so quite a few people through disaster also go through an inner shift when suddenly everything is taken away from them. That looks dreadful on the surface, but there is another side to it. And there are always people when collective disasters happen, there are quite a few people who go through an inner shift because they are driven, they are almost forced into this state of surrender, which is not negative. Surrender simply means that's what is. There's nothing I can do right now except see that this is what is. There were even people in concentration camps, which is perhaps the closest you could get to. Well, humans have created many kinds of hell on earth, but concentration camps are perhaps the closest you could get to hell on earth. And even there, there were people who suddenly went into states of deep inner peace and later survived to talk about it.
Amazing. And that's the example of being in the now, in this in this current moment.
Yes.
When you live in the place of pain, that's living in past memories and that's living in disappointment, right?
Past memories and regrets. Blaming and guilt and so on. And then, of course, there's the expectations and fears of future. So people are torn between these two. On the one hand, there's the weight of the past. On the other hand, there's the weight of the future. What's going to happen to me? There's the need of the ego to control what's going to happen. Of course, you can't. And that leads to further anxiety. And so the future, on the one hand, people believe, well, perhaps the future will make me happy. So there's the hope. On the other hand, there is the realization that, well, eventually the future might take things away from me and it'll kill me eventually. Deep down, everybody knows that. So they're torn with the future has these two faces. On the one hand, I think, well, maybe happiness is there. Maybe I can make it. I can be fully myself. If I only have enough future, one day I can be fully myself. And, of course, you can't because you're already fully yourself. And the ego doesn't know that. You can acquire things in the future. You can learn things. You can experience things. But you cannot find yourself. The only thing that really matters, the rest is details, as Einstein said. Einstein said, I want to know the mind of God. The rest is details. And so the details are there too. They are not to be neglected. It's the life as it unfolds in time. So you strive after this or that, and that's good. But there is something more fundamental, and the striving after this or that actually works much better, unfolds with much greater ease, if first of all you find what really matters, as Jesus called it, the one thing that matters, and that is that deep sense of connectedness with being, with yourself, inner peace. inner peace is not a state of lifelessness or semi-sleep. The true inner peace is a state of intense aliveness.
I find it interesting, and just in case the listeners just tuned in, I'm speaking with Eckhart Tolle. He's the author of The Power of Now, his previous best-selling book, and has a new book out now called A New Earth. And the subtitle is Awakening to Your Life's Purpose. And Eckhart, I've interviewed many guests that refer to the word purpose as something that's out in the future or that you're going towards or that you remember from the past as to why you are here, but doesn't refer to what's currently happening right now, living your purpose in your everyday, even if you're not, your career isn't whatever linked to it, that you are still existing in that purpose in every moment, in every day. And that I saw as a great perspective in your book, indicating that it's happening now.
Yes, one could say there's two kinds of purpose. There's outer purpose, and that's always secondary. Everybody has certain outer purposes, things that they do in life, their career, their relationships, their family, looking after their children, making a living or making money or whatever they do, their creative work. These are all their outer purpose. And necessarily, outer purpose involves time because it can only unfold in time. You need time to do things. You need time to get from here to there. And there's a place for that. Nothing wrong with that. It's part of being alive here in this dimension. But there's something more fundamental than outer purpose, and that's inner purpose. And the inner purpose is consciousness. Inner purpose is to be conscious now, to be aligned with life now, to generate consciousness at this moment, to be here as a conscious being, not an unconscious entity that is simply playing out the past again and again. So the waking up is your inner purpose. Waking up means to become conscious, to become alert, still alive, not identified with thinking, to find the dimension of stillness and bring it into this life. The rest then unfolds with much greater ease when you realize your main purpose is the inner purpose, and that is to be in alignment with life now, not to deny the present moment.
Can I ask you, when you what you do with your life is your teachings and you write books, and I would say your purpose is communicating this information to people and inspiring people. So you have a bit of a purpose that's in front of you and also the purpose that you're living in your daily life. What is, and I don't want to make you feel uncomfortable, but I would love to know, what is a day in your life like?
Well, it's depending on until I started writing the New Earth again, the past year and a half I've been mostly writing. There's still been a little bit of traveling. Before there would be a lot of traveling, sometimes trips would take up to 2 or 3 months, teaching trips and so on. At the moment, it's mostly being quietly at home. The book is finished, and now it's simply doing what I'm doing right now, the occasional interview, dealing with some correspondence. I have a huge backlog of correspondence, and if I wanted to be anxious, I could be anxious about
right.
There are about 1,000 letters I haven't read yet.
Just so people know.
That will get done in time. I can't do more than open one letter at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And so everything is very, very simple. There's only ever one thing at a time. I don't have great plans for the future because I know that it's all unfolding as it should already. I really just respond to the needs of the present moment.
Yes. Even in the place of the busy travel schedule, did you find it? You had permission to be able to stay in that place of peace and despite the busyness that was going on around you?
Yes. Yes. If I ever lost it, I would immediately stop doing what I'm doing because I would realize I would be in a state of dysfunction. And what is the point of somebody, a spiritual teacher, teaching inner peace who is in a state of anxiety.
Yes. Yes. Thank you very much for that.
Yeah. So even when there are big events, though, the talks, the audiences have grown over the years. Mm-hmm. So often there may be 2,000 people in the big cities that come to listen. And I never prepare anything because I wouldn't be in the now if I prepared a talk.
Right.
So I always go onto the podium, the stage, not knowing what I'm going to say, because I need to trust that the words are going to come out of the fullness of the present moment. And so it's living in trust that what is needed is going to come. And that's a wonderful place. Because otherwise it would be so stressful. Can you imagine I'm waiting in a room where 2,000 people are waiting to hear some great revelation, and my mind is empty, and I have no idea what I'm going to say.
I can imagine. Most of us teach what we need to learn the most, so you are in a much better place. That seems a lot less stressful.
Yes, and again, it's always focusing on the, so that the main focus of one's attention is the present moment. Let's say I'm going on a teaching tour, I'm in a hotel, the car comes to pick me up, I get in the car, I sit in the car, and I know I'm going to give a talk to 2,000 people. But at that moment, I just watch the traffic. I feel my inner body as I sit there, and it's alive. Mm. And I get out of the car, it's just really one step at a time. Then I sit in a little room, sip a glass of water, or eat a banana before the talk, and it's all very simple. And then I take a few steps to go out on the stage, and sit on a chair, and it's still very simple. There is no great thing ever, because that's a mental construct. Life is always very simple. You just have to be attentive to the step you're taking in this moment, and it's beautiful, and then it unfolds from there.
Yes, it has, and it's been beautiful speaking with you and enjoying your presence, and I have much gratitude and much ease and grace and appreciation for this interview. I really do. You have been a delightful man to speak with. In the future, if you ever find yourself in Los Angeles, I would love to come. I don't know if you're going to be in Los Angeles in the near future, but when you come to the area, we would love to make an announcement and find out if we can sit in your presence for a while.
I will certainly let you know. I'll be very happy to sit with you. Be wonderful.
Well, thank you very much, and your book is very needed and appreciated. And if people can pick up a copy of the book, it's called A New Earth: Awakening to Your Life's Purpose. Eckhart Tolle has been my guest, and I thank you very, very much for joining me this hour.
Thank you.
All right. Take wonderful care, as I'm sure you will.
You too.
You're probably the only person I don't need to tell to take good care, because I think I know you will.
Yes.
There's no need.
Yes.
All right. Blessings to you.
Thank you so much.
You are welcome.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
That was Eckhart Tolle, who has had the best-selling book, The Power of Now. It was a number one on the New York Times bestseller list for years. It's sold 2 million copies to date, and his recent one is A New Earth: Awakening to Your Life's Purpose. I highly encourage picking this up. It's a beautiful read. Okay, and that is it for me this afternoon. While I'm committed to bringing you the clearest information possible, in the end, I always encourage you to please listen to your own truth. Until next time, I invite you to stay aware.